And welcome to Revitalize and Replant with Tom Rainer, where we equip churches to move from declining to thriving by pointing them to a new future and a new hope. Revitalize and Replant is brought to you by the North American Mission Board.
Welcome to Revitalize and Replant, sponsored by the North American Mission Board and churchreplanters.com. More than 10% of churches in North America are at risk of closing, and the North American Mission Board is committed to reversing this trend by decreasing the death rate of existing churches and simultaneously increasing the birth rate of new churches. To learn more about what it means to become a replanting pastor or to explore resources for replanting and revitalization in your church, visit churchreplanters.com. My name is Tom Rainer. I am joined by Mark Clifton, and this is episode number 140. And I think this can be a kind of a fun one because we're going to talk about five great attractions of rural and small town churches. Not too long ago, I did a webinar and I talked about how things are beginning to change demographically, especially in the U.S. And what happened is in 2013 was the first year that for decades that the rate of decline in rural churches and small town under 2,500 in population was the first time that the decline rate actually began to go down. In other words, they weren't leaving as rapidly as they previously were. Then in 2017, a huge development took place, and the inflow into rural and small towns exceeded the outflow. This was not predicted by the demographers. It wasn't predicted by a lot of people in church life. And that trend is continuing in 2018 and 2019, and probably even as we are in 2020 right now, that trend is continuing. We are addressing that demographic reality that small towns and rural areas are making a comeback after many, many years of decline. And we want to address how small town churches and rural churches can be great attractions in the midst of that. Because many times what will happen is the people from the city will come, if we can use that phrase, and they won't fit into these rural churches and the rural churches won't fit in with these new people. But let's talk about some of the good things and reasons that people may want to come to your church if you're in a small town or if you are in a rural area, and let's accentuate the positive so that we can then make a difference as these people come to our communities. Mark Clifton, you are an expert of many things. You're an expert of bluegrass music. You're an expert of, specifically within the genre, Bill Monroe. You're an expert on barbecue. You're trying to become an expert on 60s music, but you have a long way to go.
That's true.
You're an expert on replanting, revitalization, but also you have begun to really develop a heart and an expertise for rural and small town churches. And I don't want to presume on you because we never rehearse these things ahead of time. But if we did, people would say, well, I come there so bad.
I know.
But let me just ask you this question before we quickly get into the 5 points. Why are you conversing more about rural churches and small town, or rural areas, small town areas, and their respective churches?
I think they're overlooked. They're a tremendous opportunity of evangelism and missions and ministry and discipleship in North America that has long been overlooked. Everyone seems to go to the same trendy, hot, growing places. And we have tremendous places that are basically spiritual, if you'll let me use the word, almost a spiritual desert. Places where maybe the evangelical churches years ago closed and everybody moved into the Walmart town. And so you have all these villages and crossroads where people still live, not tremendously large numbers of people, but for goodness sakes, in our own group of Southern Baptists, 90% of our churches are less than 200. And so, you know, we have all across North America, we have these communities that have, that in many ways, in terms of missiological impact, have been overlooked and forgotten. And I could go into great detail about them and the needs they have and the struggles they have. And we just have to look back at them now and say, man, we can't overlook these places. These are important places where people live, where families raise their children, where many times the grandparents are raising their grandchildren by themselves back in these small towns and rural communities with really no evangelical witness that's strong and powerful in their community. And we need to come back into those communities and help those churches once again revive recover their vision and their mission. And I just have a deep love for these rural areas and these small towns. I feel a great affinity for them. I feel like God's really kind of drawn my heart back to them. And long story short, they're sort of my tribe. I feel comfortable there. I know the people, and that's kind of where I grew up. And I have a great longing for them and to see the gospel really take root in these rural areas. And, you know, I think we've overlooked it. And I think we're beginning to realize that now.
When I moved to Nashville, Mark, I was attracted to Franklin, Tennessee, because it had a small town feel in it. It's 90,000 people in the small town now. So I'm still looking. Oh, man. Not exactly. Let's look at some of the strengths or the attractions. They can feel like family.
Family
can be one of those things that isolates you or keeps you away from the people, or it can be one of the things that attracts the people to you.
Yeah, exactly. And one of the struggles we have sometimes in rural and small town churches is they want to be a copy of what goes on in the bigger city, and they need to really play to their strengths. I mean, we can talk on another podcast about how they can make some adjustments and do the things they need to do, but they have certain strengths that the larger churches in the cities don't have. And if they will play to those strengths, because if you talked about the rural America and how it's really kind of growing and reinvigorating in many ways, and we all know that's because people can work remotely. You can live anywhere. Many people live anywhere they want.
True.
And still do the job that they're doing. And the cost of living in these cities is incredibly ridiculously high. And so people are choosing to move to less populated areas because they can work remotely and live at a much, much lower cost of living. And so one of the reasons they choose to go to those places is they like the small town feel. They like the comfortableness of it. And so a small town church, a rural church, man, you can feel like a family, and you need to play to those strengths and understand just the care and concern you can have for one another, the involvement you can have in each other's lives. That's one of the real joys of that kind of rural and small town church, is it does truly feel like a family. You know, in a city church, and I've been in both, and I grew up, part of my life was in a very rural community of about 1,000 or 1,500 people called Princeton, Missouri. That's where I was born. They got a Dollar General, and they call it the mall. So that's
so we now can refer to Mark as a Princeton man.
That's right, a Princeton man for sure. But and then I've served in, you know, Atlanta and Montreal both. And when you're in the city, you know, you have some people in gathered worship. They probably come from various zip codes, different neighborhoods, different school systems. And so while you work hard in a city to create a sense of family and unity in your church, it's a little bit of a more struggle because people live in different parts many times of that city. True. But in a small town, you're all going to the same school. You're all going to the same post office. You're all going to the same co-op. And if somebody drives through town in a truck you don't recognize, you all talk about it the next morning. So there's this wonderful sense of family and closeness that you need to play to. And it's a great place to be for that reason.
Well, this is similar. When you go to these small churches, they are often integral parts of the community. Many times they're the centerpiece of the community, whereas in their city, you may just be another institution or another organization. It's a possibility.
Here's what I tell guys who are looking for churches to go to sometimes. And, you know, you go to a city and the church is in decline and it's down to whatever number. You pick a number. You call them a death spiral, but you know, below 50, below 30, something like that. A congregation in a city that at one time had 200, 250 in gathered worship and built a building to seat probably 400 in gathered worship, and now they have 30 in gathered worship. That congregation in that city and in that neighborhood, in that way that they are now existing, has really no social validation in the community anymore. The community would look at that church that once had 300 in gathered worship and now has 30, that meets in a building that seats 400. And the community, now I'm not saying the Lord looks at it that way, but the community looks at it and says, this church is no longer valid. It is dysfunctional. It's broken. It's no longer valid. And so it loses social validity. And that's a big hole you got to dig out of in a revitalization. Now you go to a rural church, maybe they're 10 or 12 or 14 people, it doesn't matter. It still has social validation. The community still sees it as meaningful and valid in the community. It's a place you gather for weddings and for funerals. It's a place you have a Christmas Eve service. You might have other things going on there. And you walk into that church, usually it's more appropriately sized, the building is anyway. They probably don't have us a building that seats 500. You walk into that church, maybe 12, 14, 15 people. But as you say, it is still considered an important part of the community. As a matter of fact, it's right up there, I think, with the school and the post office. It's the way the community identifies that we still matter, we still have validity, we're still here, and they don't want to lose the church.
That's true.
You know, they don't want to lose the school. They don't want to lose the post office. They don't want to lose the gas station. They don't want to lose the church. That's a really important part of going to a rural community.
A third attraction I remember so very well is that they can be agile. My first church that I've mentioned on Rainer on Leadership, as well as this podcast, Revitalize and Replant, I refer to it as the Church of First Merle, 7 members. My then family of 4, Jess was not born at the time, caused the church to increase by more than 50% the first Sunday. I sent letters to my, called different of my buddies and say, hey, I just got here and we're over 50% up. So I was using numbers. So in that church, and then my first church was called Hopewell Baptist Church in Jefferson County, Indiana. My second church was called Hopewell Baptist Church, Jefferson County, Kentucky. When I got to my third church, so many times during the welcome, say, welcome to Hopewell. No, we're not. We're not in Jefferson County. But here's what I discovered. Yeah, they can be change resistant, but because they were relatively small, and the first one was absolutely small, we could make changes when we really wanted to make changes. Agility was there. You didn't, if you got the buy-in of a handful of people, you had a unanimous vote in the congregation.
And right.
You could be agile. That could be attractive to many people who lead churches.
Yeah, I want to set that over here to the side for just a second because I want to drill into that. But before I do that, there's something else that the rural church, small town church can provide. It can really embrace a very young, inexperienced leader and give him a lot of room to grow.
True.
I know that because I was 18 years old when the first church called me as their pastor.
Now, Mark, I thought I knew a lot about you. I didn't know you started serving as a pastor when you were 18.
I did. My senior year in my freshman year in college. And it was a rural church up in rural North Missouri, open country church with a cemetery next to it. It had actually been closed for about 20 years, and a great uncle of mine reopened it, started having services again. And he called me to come preach for him. He knew I was a preacher boy. And so I went up one Sunday and preached for him at this church, Alta Vista Baptist Church in Weatherby, Missouri. And then he called me that afternoon. And I was down at William Jewell College in Liberty and went out on the hallway to the phone out there. And he said, Mark, this is Bill. He said, you did a good job this morning. He said, we had a vote tonight and we voted to call you as pastor. And this is a true story. I said, Bill, I didn't even know I was in view of a call. He said, well, I didn't tell you in case they voted no. And I said, you think I'm kidding, but that's true. He said, but son, they voted unanimous. They want you to be their pastor. I said, well, Bill, I'm 18. I just started college. He was retired, a sweet old man. He'd actually led my dad to Christ and mentored him. And he said, you know, Mark, you come up here and preach and I'll be here. I live in the community and I'll, and so they, I, you know, a lot long ago, I found a cassette of me preaching a sermon up there. Oh, my word. Oh, man. Have you ever heard a cassette of yourself preaching when you were a teenager? I mean, it was, these people were full of grace to put up with me. But I learned so much in that place in those early years. And so rural churches and small town churches, they really can provide a great opportunity to develop young leaders that probably aren't going to happen in some larger cities and larger places. So I wanted to bring that up. But in terms of being agile, absolutely. You're right. You get the buy-in of one family, maybe one matriarch or patriarch, and you can go anywhere. You can do anything.
Exactly.
And they're really not usually into 5-year plans, okay? I mean, they may not even have a budget. And that can drive you nuts. And you can think, oh, we need to have a budget. You got to just kind of pull back and go, no, they really do operate like a family. And like a flock, and they just sort of, and if you want to buy into that agility and say, you know, we can turn on a dime here. We don't have a lot of structure and organization, a lot of people that have to make all kinds of approval. We get the buy-in by these key individuals. They'll make it happen. And I've seen that happen so many times. And I really think just the ability for them to move quickly, change quickly. Now, they're not going to change. I don't mean they adapt to change quickly. But let's just say there's a need. Let's say somebody has a fire at their house and or their barn, and we need to you know, go help them maybe rebuild it or repair it. Man, they'll be there tomorrow to do it, right? I mean, they don't need to have a bunch of meetings about doing that kind of stuff. They'll go do it. And when I was an interim pastor up in rural Missouri a few years ago, I still had a lot of connections in Kansas City. And there was a homeless church we had in Kansas City. It was called Set Free Church. And we had men right off the street who came to know Jesus, and they were looking for jobs and needing some tools to repair cars and things. And I was the interim pastor of a rural church out in the open country up in North Missouri. And one Sunday, I just shared that during a sermon illustration. And before the next Sunday, these farmers had gathered up some tools that they didn't need. They had driven down to Kansas City. They had met with these men, given them some cool tools, started a relationship with them that continued for a long time. So that's the kind of agility I'm talking about.
I love it. I love it. Another great advantage is you can have a volunteer-centric church. Many leaders of larger churches, when I say larger, 200 and up, many leaders of larger churches dream about having enough volunteers to do the work. And many of these smaller and rural churches, small town churches and rural churches, you've got almost 100% of the people volunteering. They just step in. It is as natural as anything else because that's what they're supposed to do. There have been so many times, Mark, I wanted to take the blueprint of the volunteer help that's in a small church and just transpose it to a larger church. And it doesn't always work that well. And boy, volunteers there.
You go to a rural church, a small town church. Look, I went to a small town church recently that God has blessed it, and it has grown. All right. This small town church is about 350 people in attendance, and the community is less than 1,000.
Wow.
And when they finally had to build a new building, I love the fact they didn't tear down the old building downtown. They kept it for a youth center and their church offices, but they went just outside of town and built a brand new building, which was the largest building in the county. There's no stoplight for 30 miles in this town. All right. So but they have over 300 a week. And so I was down there recently and meeting with the pastor, and he was showing me the new building, and I said, man, it looks so nice. And I said, do you have a custodian? And he looked at me and he goes, well, no, we don't have a custodian. We all take turns. So even though they had one time been a small town, little church downtown, even though they moved to the outside of town and were now really a regional church reaching the entire county, they were still so volunteer centric that it didn't make sense to hire a custodian, even for this large building that was valued over $1 million. No, we still take turns keeping it clean. It looks spotless. There is this sense in a rural community that we all just pitch in. We all work. We don't pay people to do things like that. And so if you buy into that volunteer, and this pastor has bought into it, and his people are just volunteering in every single school in the county and doing all kinds of great things. It's a great culture.
Now the final one on this is the tenacity of the small town and rural churches. They just hang in there.
All right.
What are you laughing at, Mark Clifton?
Well, you ought to just. I don't know. Did Lyle Schaller really say, you know, maybe he didn't. I heard sometime that Lyle Schaller said that a small town church is like a bug. You step on it, you think it's done, and then you're dead, and then you walk away and it keeps moving. And I'm not sure. He probably did say that at one point.
Lyle Schaller's probably written around 90 books. So yeah. Schaller is kind of like Spurgeon. You can quote him and no one knows the difference because he's
written. Probably true.
One of my family members was in a church visiting one time, and the pastor said from the pulpit, now Tom Rainer says, and so my relative called me and said, did you say that? I said, I don't think so, but I've written enough where I can't deny it anymore.
Well, Richard Blackaby's always telling me that, you know, I quote Blackaby all the time. And I say Blackaby says, but people don't remember that. They just know that I say it. So Richard Blackaby, we're good friends. And so he'll often rib me about how someone quotes me and it's the exact quote of him from someplace else. But I'd heard Lyle Schaller one time supposedly said that a small town rural church is like a bug you step on. You think you've killed it and you walk away and it keeps moving. They're very hard to kill. And I told you, I didn't tell you this, but a year or two ago, I was the interim director of missions in our Southern Baptist Life in a very small rural association in extreme North Missouri, where I grew up.
Yeah.
And so when I was a kid, my father pastored there, and there were little churches in towns like Utica and Tina and Half Rock and places like that. And so when Jamesport and those kind of places. So when I became interim director of missions, when I was a kid, 50 plus years ago, those churches had 10, 12, 15 people in them. 50 years later, those churches are still there with 10, 12, 15 people. Now, they're not the same 10 or 12, 15, but they are tenacious.
Yeah.
I mean, they are. There's something about a rural church that can weather things and can endure hardship. You know, part of it is they don't have a huge physical plant to take care of, and they are so volunteer-centric that they can take care of themselves. But that's a blessing. And, you know, when we talk in Southern Baptist Life about that every year, about 900 Southern Baptist churches cease to exist, right?
Mm-hmm.
In 2014, 10% of that 900 were in communities of less than 10,000 people.
Wow. So 90% were in the
large. 90% were in other words, the death of churches that's going across North America in Southern Baptist Life is not epidemic in the rural areas. It doesn't mean we don't need help there. Many of those churches in the rural areas are just barely hanging on and not really impacting their community, not making disciples. And so we have a lot of work in revitalization to do, but they're not dying. They hang on. Whereas in the city, they die for various reasons. And so they are tenacious, and we have the numbers to back that up. Yeah. And, you know, if I could do anything in my life, if I could do two or three different things at the same time, I would be a rural pastor, a small town pastor. That was one of the I would love to do that. Yeah, I would.
Well, I hope this has been encouraging to those of you who are wondering, is there really any life in rural or small town churches? The answer is yes. The answer is yes, that there are small town churches and the rural churches that are doing well. And we've listed five of the reasons that they are, and I hope that they have been encouraging to you. Look, Revitalize 2020 is about to begin. Last chance, we're about to close the doors on this. Just around the corner, less than 2 weeks, in Bradenton, Florida, presenting sponsor, the North American Mission Board and Idea Network is our partner on this. Get ready to sign up. You'll see the famous, illustrious Mark Clifton there. I'll be there. A host of other people will be, but we're about to close the doors on it. We're about completely sold out. So thank you for signing up for Revitalize 2020. Thank you for being at Revitalize and Replant, the podcast, and we'll continue to help churches get healthier together.
Thanks for joining us today on Revitalize and Replant with Tom Rainer. If you'd like to learn more about re-energizing your church to reach your community, subscribe to the podcast on iTunes or Google Play or in your favorite podcasting app. For additional resources on church leadership and to join the conversation online, visit TomRainer.com, where we are growing healthy churches together.